You're listening to Face Off, episode 102, recorded January 3rd, 2011. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt, the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketshipit.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I am Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about lots of different things involving web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com, where you can get all the links to all of the cool stuff that we're going to be talking about in this episode. So, you know, interesting thing. It's funny how much we really require technology these days. I mean, Mark, we use Skype to record the show, and it's kind of one of those things where it's funny that sometimes it's nice to not be put to the new version. Sometimes it's nice to be held back. So we were having these issues with Skype increasing your volume for you when you were definitely asking it or not asking it to. It turns out even if you turn off all the settings that tell Skype to auto-adjust for you, it still does it for you in the newest version.
Yeah, so after pulling our hair out and using a last resort, trying to use like Google Talk or something to record the show, we thought of maybe even trying Skype on Linux. The great thing about that is the Linux version of Skype is always behind because Skype on Linux is like smaller percentage.
Yeah, it's not exactly like the giant target market, huh?
But I mean, it actually adheres to like the checkbox. If you click don't mess with my sounds, it will not mess with my sounds. Yeah. So it worked out great.
Yeah, and it's funny because it just seemed always kind of like clunky a little bit at first. You're kind of like, I don't know, Skype, on the Mac just seems kind of clunky. And so good thing to have it. So the Skype version on Windows and Mac OS X is Skype 5.0. For the Mac, it's 2.8. But the Linux version is... So they must have different versions for each operating system. Because the Linux one is 2.1 beta 2.
I remember trying to use Skype. Well, for a while there, I was like, I got to use Linux for everything. And then eventually I was just like, there's some headaches that you can avoid by just giving up and just doing certain things on like Windows or a Mac. And Skype was one of those things for a while.
Totally. That's why we recorded on the Mac forever, because the Mac version of Skype was just better than Linux, and I just didn't have a Windows machine. So
it's funny too, because Audacity, our program that we use to record the show, actually runs better in Linux as well.
We just switched it over. That's funny. Yeah, same thing. It's so one thing you find with Linux, I guess, is once you get it configured and working, things are usually pretty rock solid, which I've seen, with other operating systems. Sometimes things just change or whatnot, but sound management in Linux, I think, is a kind of a pain. It's not very intuitive, I don't think, and if it works, it works, but that's the best part about it. Once you get it to work, like we have, Audacity recording from the right input, we have you being played to the right input and right output and everything, it'll work as long as we don't ever mess with it.
Yeah, it can be a little bit painful to configure sometimes, but...
Hey, I got some other news. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. No.
I was just saying Skype is definitely an improvement, and it's working now. So.
Yeah. Very impressed with the Skype Linux version. Hey, another interesting tidbit. At work, we were trying to use Drobos. So, you and I each have Drobos here at home, trying to use Drobos at work, And I found, you know, it's funny, in the past couple months, I've gotten really sort of angry at Drobo. I find that they have Drobo elites and stuff, and they say that they're kind of, you know, they claim they're kind of enterprisey, but we found that their performance is just not, you know, fast enough for anything that we want to do. And I kind of got down and out on about Drobo just in general until this week when one of the drives in my Drobo died. And my data, you know, it was like one of those things where the drive didn't like start sending out warning signals that it was dying or anything. It just, I walked in my office one day and I was like, what is the red blinky light in the Drobo? Oh, that means my drive is dead.
Hopefully you didn't lose any data.
No, I didn't, because that's the best part about Drobo. I have two drives in there. So now I just need to replace drive. I'm scared because I'm down to one drive redundancy, and I bought these at the same time. We had one of these drives. I think we both had a drive fail in our Drobo already, though, these Western Digitals, right?
I have not yet to have a drive fail, knock on wood. But you have had, this is your second one, right?
Yeah.
Because you had one, you had one fail right off the bat. It was like almost
It came failed, I think, or like within a month or something like that. Yeah. So as much as I get down and out about Drobos at work, as far as a consumer product it goes, they are awesome. Can't beat it. I love it. I'm actually kind of glad this happened, because it made me realize, you know, you can easily get in a funk about products or something, but keep your mind open, because they may save all, you know, save every, our raw face-off recordings are on the Drobo. And right now, since it's, you know, one drive's bad, it's like giving me big flashing lights, you know, don't put any data on here. So I haven't been able to put some of our more recent episodes up there. So I'm got to hurry up and buy it. I'm going to buy two hard drives this time, so I have three drive redundancy. Ooh. And get them put in there so we can start saving stuff.
Are you going for the 2 terabyte?
I'm going to buy 2 1-terabyte drives, because if I buy just 1 2-terabyte drive right now, I'll still only have the same amount of space because of the way sort of the RAID works.
Because you just have the two volume.
Right. And so I think once you start getting more than two drives, you can maybe get, like, if I put a 2 terabyte in, I think I'll get, you know, like 1.5 terabytes of extra space. But either way, again, don't forget, you know, this happened to me with Google Wave even, you know, I still am not a huge fan of Wave, but I found use cases where it works and stuff. So, you know, keep an open mind about products and cool stuff, because they may save your bacon like my Drobo has.
I feel safe that our recordings are on your Drobo. Well, maybe not right now, since you have only one drive.
Right, yeah. You should yank a drive and give it to me. Do you got extra drives lying around? Anyways, let's move on to our geek tool of the week. So either this month or the next couple months, I don't know how long it'll go. I've been a fan of cooking and sort of food for a while. Mark, in general, you really weren't a huge cooker. You liked... You know, you cooked a couple things, but recently in the past couple of months, you've really got into it a bit more. You really like to try and cook more fun stuff at home, and I find cooking to be extremely relaxing and satisfying, you know, if you cook a good meal. So our next couple of months, our geek tools are going to be focused on people, I would say, like you, Mark, who, you know how to cook the basics and stuff, but maybe trying to explore cooking more of your own food, trying to eat out less or eat less sort of frozen stuff from the fridge. So our geek tool of the week is an excellent book that Mark found, that is really cool. It's called Cooking for Geeks.
Yeah. So the reason I wanted, or, you know, the reason I checked out this book was I didn't want a recipe book. I didn't want like The Joy of Cooking or something. It's just like, you know, the ridiculous recipe book that's got everything and everything you needed to know. Because what I found, what I didn't like about cooking was, you know, doing the dishes, preparing, you know, getting going to the grocery store and preparing everything to get ready to cook. Mm-hmm. Or I'd buy all this stuff for one recipe, but then I couldn't use it. Like, I couldn't think of what I would do with it. And then, so I'd have a lot of wasted food, especially the things that go bad fairly quickly. I was excited to see that this book had a chapter for cooking for one as well. I know that can be difficult. I've always cooked for, you know, my family or whatever, at least 2 people, and most of the time 4 people, you know, living in the dorms, we often took turns cooking meals and things. Mm-hmm. And cooking for one can be kind of difficult as
absolutely recipes. Absolutely.
And then the other thing is being able to just look into your pantry and just look at ingredients and like come up with recipes. Right.
Well, like a lot of people, it's kinda cool. Yeah, a lot of people, you know, when you try to get into cooking, you start looking at recipes and trying to do recipes, which mm-hmm. is a way to go about it. But really, what the recipes don't teach you is sort of the science or the chemistry. I mean, cooking is a lot of chemistry when you think about it. So it doesn't teach you, you know, how to just figure out what to make. And so it's funny because like the different cooking styles between like my wife and I, she's an excellent recipe cook. Like she can take a recipe and, you know, maybe modify it a little bit. But in general, like when it's something totally new and all she has is a recipe, she's really good at cooking at it. I'm not. I'm definitely one of those, like if it's a recipe, I have a hard time with it. I'm more of I like to learn the basics. Like I like to learn, I've been spending time figuring out how to poach an egg, like how to make a good poached egg, how to fry a good egg, how to do the sort of basics. And then from there, I make like big meals. Like once you know how to, you know, basically how eggs sort of cook, then it's like, hey, I also know how to like fry potatoes so I can make like a hash. And you can start learning the sort of basics. Like a lot of people, I think, go to, you know, their first like, I'm going to learn to cook. What do I like? I don't know. I like chicken cordon bleu. So I'm going to make chicken cordon bleu, which is like a long and very involved recipe. And that's what's cool about this book is it teaches you sort of the chemistry, the tips, the basics, you know. And like you said, it allows you to look at what you have and make something rather than saying, here's my recipe, I need to go get these 12 ingredients.
Yeah, I was surprised. One of the chapters it was talking about how recipes in the old days used to be one sentence long. And I was like, what? And they like showed an example. And I guess there's even a person that tweets out recipes in 140 characters, an entire recipe, and has her own short code and everything for it. But yeah, like once you learn the basics, you can kind of just kind of know, I guess is the premise. I'm only about 30 to 40% through, and I can say that because the Kindle tells me percentage and not page numbers.
Yeah. Is that some smack talk there?
There's been some good. What was that?
Is that some Kindle versus Nook smack talk there?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. What was I going to say? It shows you great tips on how to like save dishes, like use one bowl to do multiple things, you know, so you don't mm-hmm. have that headache of having 100 dishes when you're done cooking a meal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tips there is to use like a digital scale. And then you use one bowl and you just keep adding like your dry ingredients in that same bowl and your weight just goes up and you just tear the weight and you hit zero and you just add, you know, more.
Yep.
It's not getting the one cup flour thing out. And then there's also a lot of interviews by a lot of cooks. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about too was it does throw in some geek lingo. So if you are a programmer or whatever, it'll keep you at least entertained by that. It's like, it talks about, you know, there's different types of people, you know, like Vim and Emacs users. This is my kind of book.
Yeah, totally. So check it out. Get the link to it in the show notes. And in the next 1 or 2 months, I don't know, until we get tired of it, I guess we're going to be trying to give you geek tools and hints and tips on how, you know, how to handle yourself in the kitchen if you are, you know, if you're fairly new in that area. And if you are skilled, you know, master of the kitchen, send us some tips or geek tools or anything like that so that we can try and help some of the people out there, because really I find cooking ridiculously satisfying. I love, you know, because I love food anyways. I'm like a 280 pound guy who just eats like crazy. My mom, you know, always kept me fed, so it's one of my favorite things in the world. So it's time to take control of it. So get the link for that book in the show notes. Let's move on to our web apps. Our first web app, it's pretty cool. It's a good idea that they thought about, is the Google Online SVG Editor. So SVGs are a vector image format, correct? But the cool part is with the new HTML5 Canvas stuff, you can, you know, edit SVG stuff. You know, you can manipulate SVG stuff using JavaScript inside the browser. So Google came out with an online HTML5 SVG editor.
What's amazing to me, I was about to say it supports IE6. I was like, that is incredible. But then I see that you have to use the Chrome frame.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, this is cool. I tried it out. I was kind of looking for a pen tool, but
There's like a drawing tool, like you can make lines.
I mean, this is good to, I don't
segments.
Know.
You can make line segments, I guess, but like I'm playing with the face-off logo right now.
Have you done a vector logo or anything before?
Yeah, I'm playing with the face-off one right now.
Okay. Can you like edit? Can you like move text around and stuff?
Well, I guess I'm just here's something really cool. If you go up next to there's a little pencil with the thing. If you click next to it, you can actually see and edit the SVG source code.
Ooh. Wow.
Which is really cool because you see like this simple, this face-off show logo is a lot of stuff. So, no, I mean, as far as I can see, there isn't a way I can see to extract the points out of a vector. There should be. I feel like I'm noobish. I just thought it was cool that, I mean, this canvas stuff with the SVGs coming in. The big thing for me was, like, I imported an image, and I was like, hey, that's an image that existed, and I'm editing it in a browser.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Let's see here. I'm trying to double-click on things. You can rotate the images. And you know what the other cool part is? It's like an HTML file. It's not like hosted on a place. You like download it, and it's an HTML file that you open up.
I could see this being useful for maybe quick little edits.
Yeah, or I mean, as a developer, it's a cool way to look at, you know, an SVG image. You can look at the code, like the source code, and manipulate it. Because this is going to be sort of the next level of like super interactive websites, is JavaScript canvas SVG stuff. So, you know, like I had never even looked at the source of an SVG image, even though I knew it was just kind of like source code. I just never did. Cause you know, I double click it and it opens up an image editor, but seeing like the source code of an image is kind of cool and kind of intense.
One use case maybe would be to export as a PNG if you didn't have way to convert SVG on your desktop and you just needed to convert a logo real quick to a usable format.
Totally.
You could upload it here and export it.
Yeah. But just cool stuff, a cool little SVG editor from Google. I just think it's cool that we're seeing this stuff. Like, you know, we talked about the HTML5 image editor last week, and now here's, you know, an SVG editor. First of all, I mean, I just like vector stuff anyways because it's, you know, it's not rasterized, so it's sort of like infinitely zoomable, and I love that. But now, you know, we're seeing like, you know, pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty amazing what you can do in the browser without, you know, using Flash.
Ooh, I don't know what I did, but I got the points to show up.
Oh, I know what you did. You clicked the little circle in the square right next to the source code.
And then I think I double click too, and so that you do get like the pen tool style curvature,
yeah,
stuff.
That's crazy.
Cool.
So check it out. The link's in the show notes. It's kind of long. Otherwise, I would just say it. But check it out. The next web app that we want to talk about. I think this is really cool. We talked about four ways to get rid of your, you know, recycle your old electronics. And one of the things that made us nervous about other products was we hadn't really heard of them. We didn't know who they are. Well, now if you go to green.ebay.com/instant sale, you can actually get money for your old electronics. So,
and it's a name you trust.
Exactly. I mean, eBay is a big company. I know them. So I don't feel like I'm going to get slighted or anything. What you do is you just search for whatever, you know, gadget you have, tell it, you know, tell them their condition, what it wants, and they'll tell you how much money they'll give you for it. Even if it's worth nothing, they will still give you free shipping. They'll send you a box. You can give them your electronics and they'll recycle them for free. This is really cool because like where I live, they do e-recycling once in a while, like big e-recycling drives, but really it gets so full so quick that it never lasts long enough for everybody to recycle all their stuff. So I think this is really cool that you can, you know, go on here and potentially get cash for your old gadgets. And if you can't get cash for your old gadgets, you can still recycle them and they'll be disposed of properly, which is really cool. And I think it's awesome that eBay is doing this.
They'll help you recycle it even if it's worth anything, I guess.
Yep. If your device has no value and does not sell, we'll recycle it for free. Recyclers are certified e-stewards.
I wonder if they'll take a big, heavy monitor.
You know, I was kind of wondering that, too.
I got like a bunch of CRT monitors.
I know. I'm not sure if they...
So, I did try a reasonable one. I tried my iPod Touch, and it said, ow, it would give me $38.
Really? Did the website just, like, punch you in the face or something?
My cat just bit my...
So Apple iPod Touch, first generation, 8 gigabyte. Yeah, I guess that's what I have a first-gen iPod Touch. Does it power on successfully? Yes. Was item engraved personalized? No. Overall condition? I'd say it's in good condition. Rechargeable battery included functioning properly? Yes. AC adapter included? No. Yes. I guess. Are the original cables included? Yes. And calculate $43.
For what? Did you have a... What was that you tried?
My iPod Touch.
Did you have a larger one than me?
First gen. 8 gigabyte, I believe. Actually, it's 16 gigabyte, so I could get more for it.
Oh, 16.
Yeah, so I so some of the details of this are kind of odd. So once the buyer receives the item, they'll inspect it within 2 days. If the item is described, the buyer will deposit funds in your PayPal account, which is nice. Okay, that's cool. So if they think that you misrepresented it, the buyer can make you a counter offer. You can within 5 days. If you accept, the buyer will give you the money. If not, they will ship it back to you free of charge. This is where it's funny. If they send you an updated price within 5 days and you don't say yes or no, it's assumed you mean yes and they give you the money. But that's cool. It's like, it's sort of the thing eBay does. They have buyers, it's connecting buyers and sellers. So people want to buy these old electronics. And apparently eBay is saying, you know, even if you can't find a buyer for your item, then they will, they'll just recycle it for you for free. And if they do have a buyer, you'll get cash directed, deposited right into your PayPal account. Nice and easy.
Excellent.
Yeah, we need to make sure we're recycling our electronics I feel like it's slowing down a little bit. There was sort of that just electronic craze there for a while where, you know, you're getting new stuff constantly. I mean, it's still bad, but it seemed like it was worse. But, I have a ton of old electronics sitting around and really making sure they're disposed of properly. You know, what precious, you know, rare earth metals they can get out of it should be extracted to make new electronics, and everything else that is toxic should be disposed of properly. So make sure you do that instead of just throwing it in the garbage can, don't you think?
Yep.
Be good stewards. So if you have some news, a follow-up, or web application you think we should look at, let us know by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can send us a tweet, send us an email, give us a voicemail. We love to hear from you guys, and we appreciate it a ton. Let's move into our topic, Mark, which is something that I've been thinking about for a while, and it's kind of a funky topic, I guess you could say. It's, you know, UI frameworks.
Yeah, it's kind of a funky topic because there's kind of a really lightweight. Let's back up. There's UI frameworks. We're talking about UI frameworks for web development.
Right.
So not like Qt or GDK.
Yeah, exactly. This is for websites. I mean, these are basically just sort of ways to give you nice UI elements really quickly and easily, right?
Yeah. There's like the lighter end ones where it's kind of an extension to like a JavaScript framework. And then there's kind of like a whole application. Like if you wanted to create like Gmail.
Yeah, like a full application, including UI and then some sort of like, you know, data handling stuff in the back, or, you know, data handling things. So,
Or maybe a better example would be like Google Docs, like, right, have like a menu on the top and like some buttons.
Right. So let's get into the first one that I kind of know. I guess I know the most about. And this is kind of funny because I guess I was sort of naive about it at first, but it's the jQuery UI library. So I guess I always thought this, I mean, this was sort of my, back when I was just really beginning to do more, you know, JavaScript stuff. I thought these were synonymous. Like, I look at jQuery and I was like, oh, you get the dollar selector, you get some Ajax stuff, and then you get things like fades and all the cool, you know, transitions and stuff. And really, you know, jQuery at its core is like sort of the Ajax handling the dollar sign function. And then you can, you know, put jQuery UI on top of it, which gives you, I believe, all the transitions and stuff. And then some little like sort of UI widgets and things like that.
Yeah. So even though with like the core jQuery, you can have fades and stuff, you don't like have a calendar, for example. You would, if you didn't have jQuery UI or a similar framework, you would have to develop a calendar for like date picking. If you had an event website where people could pick a date, mm-hmm. You would have to, you know, develop your own calendar, or you know, have something very basic, like have them enter in the date by hand or whatever, which is, you know, prone to errors and isn't very consistent. You know, so jQuery UI tries to give you some widgets and utilities you can put on, and it's really great because you can set themes and you can change colors to match your site. So like literally within 10 minutes you could have, let's say, you know, like tabbed divs. You could have a color picker. So, you know, if you were going to make a, you know, like the SVG editor or something like
yeah,
that,
totally.
You wanted to have like a color swatch on the side, mm-hmm. kind of like Photoshop, you could do that. Calendar, like we said, if you go to jQuery UI, you can browse the different widgets. They've got progress bars, which are always great, buttons, which are nice because, you know, oftentimes you'll develop a form for like the login and you'll make it all pretty and stuff. And then you'll have like a contact form later on in your site and you'll like use a different button or whatever. It's nice to kind of keep everything consistent,
right.
Color wise and shape and size.
Yeah. And the theme stuff really helps that.
Yeah. So if you use a theme, it really helps it, makes you look a little bit professional and
like
kind of saves you some time at, you know,
yeah.
the process.
I mean, the big kicker for this is like, if you're using jQuery already, just throw in jQuery UI, you know, cause it's, you know, like we're using jQuery in our apps. We use jQuery elsewhere. If you need user interface, if you need a, you know, a quick UI framework, you can just tag on jQuery UI along with jQuery, and you don't have to have like sort of another full-fledged JavaScript library tagged on.
It's also worth noting that each one of their plugins, like the date picker, like the tabbed divs, are tested and compatible with IE6, Firefox 3, Safari, Opera. So you don't have to worry about that kind of thing. You know, like let's say you wanted to have a pop-up and like a pop-up dialog box with like a close and okay or cancel. Mm-hmm. You know, you can implement that yourself, but you know, why do it if it's already tested against all these browsers
exactly.
and you can theme it?
Exactly. Why rewrite it? Let's move on to the next one, which is another really popular one. It's YUI.
Yeah, I like this one just because it had, you know, a big name behind it. Yahoo actually uses it on all their sites, including their main page. This is the third one in like the series of YUI. It seems like each generation, they have, you know, minor releases in between, but I guess each one they add some major improvements to it.
Mm-hmm.
YUI3 is the one currently used at Yahoo. They had one of the interesting features that I saw is their image loader. It seems like Yahoo is very, very interested in making the web appear faster.
Totally.
Let's say they had it all down. They're, you know, they're using content delivery networks and things like that. And, you know, they've done all they can in the back end. They're really interested in making the website appear faster once they've done all their optimizations in the back end. One of those things that they do is like preload images and things like that. So when you click next, half the images are already loaded, things like that. Well, one of the plugins they have called the image loader will, if you're, and I don't know how they do this, but they detect what your browser can see on the page, and it will only, well, it'll start loading those images and make sure that they're completely loaded before it grabs some of the images that are maybe below the fold, as they like to say,
mm-hmm.
which just means, you know, you would have to scroll down to see them anyways. So that's a way to make the web appear faster than it is to just load the top of the page first.
Yeah.
And they have a plugin in their YUI that makes that really easy to do.
Yeah, big name behind it. And like you said, Amazon is always looking at optimization. And like you said, if they're using it on their homepage, they get a ton of traffic. So it's probably pretty battle-tested and pretty fast.
Yep. The next one we've got is the Dojo / Digit and Dojo X. It's kind of a whole toolkit. Like jQuery, Dojo is kind of the core, and then they have widgets like jQuery UI.
Totally.
An equivalent, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of these, it's hard to separate the UI from everything else. It just is that way. You know, I think a lot of them depend upon, you know, well, I guess if you try to write a whole bunch of just straight UI stuff without a nice JavaScript sort of framework behind it, it would be pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm. Dojo's big. They have a lot of big names like Sun, AOL, IBM, Cisco using it. They're supporting a lot of the mobile devices as well as, you know, the modern mm-hmm. common browser. They have, if you go click on their demo, their UI, demos, it's very similar to jQuery. I would say you could probably get this up and running just as fast. I don't have any personal experience of implementing it, but their demos look good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people use this. I am trying to think of, goodness, there's something about, there's like the Dojo Foundation. So, I mean, they're really sort of a force that is trying to promote open source, you know, similar to like the Apache Foundation. So, Dojo's doing some cool stuff. Like I said, you're right. I'm with you. I don't have a lot of experience, but like if you go to the rich UI widgets, you know, they have just great, simple to use widgets, really clean, really good. So, what do you like? Those are sort of, you know, the basic sort of JavaScript UI frameworks where like, you know, if jQuery UI, if you're using jQuery, YUI is kind of its own thing by itself, but it's used by Yahoo. It's very rich, a lot of stuff, you know, big community behind it as well. And then Dojo, I believe it's sort of the same thing, right? It has Dojo is the sort of JavaScript framework, and then you get the sort of Digit widgets and stuff like that if you're using Dojo, correct?
Yeah, these are the three major players in the JavaScript mm-hmm. UI area. I guess I just remembered also Dojo was back in when I was messing around with Zen framework. It was their framework mm-hmm. for creating kind of the UI elements.
Yeah, they have some nice widgets. I mean, I'm looking through their widgets right now, and they're really sort of just clean and a lot of like sort of just nice little effects that make things really smooth and clean. So I'll definitely have to take a look at this next time if I want to, you know, make a switch in what I'm doing for my UI stuff.
So these were kind of the, you could probably, copy and paste these on your website and change some CSS, and you're well on your way to creating a UI.
Absolutely.
These next, UI frameworks we're going to talk about are a little bit more towards creating an app maybe from scratch.
Right. These ones are more, they're kind of like application UI frameworks in that, like Mark said, like you could take an application like Agile Task and you're like, man, I really want to, make the UI a little sweeter and like, okay, well, I'll use the jQuery UI and put that on there. Like you said, make some CSS changes, throw a YUI or whatever. But like, let's say if this the next ones, if you want to use them, it's like your whole app needs to be in this sort of framework. You can't just slap this on top of an existing application.
So the first one we're going to talk about is the Google Web Toolkit. What I liked about this one was they had a design view. You could download their Eclipse plugin and mm-hmm. just kind of like back in the day with Visual Basic, you could just drag elements around.
Right.
Create menus, create drop-down menus, and kind of build an app by drag and drop feel.
Totally.
And it will actually generate the JavaScript in the background, and the code needed
crazy
to program the events that coordinate with the JavaScript. So I thought that was really cool. Other than that, I mean, I haven't played with that one, but right. I just thought it was cool that you could you know, go in there with an Eclipse plugin, drag and drop, and then have code made for you.
And that's kind of what Google uses to build a lot of their web apps, right? I mean, if I remember correctly, it was kind of like, this is like what they were using to like build Gmail back in the day. And it was like, oh man, it's cool. You don't even write any JavaScript. You write like Java and it makes it or something like that. Isn't that? I might be talking about stuff I don't know. So
yeah, I'm not sure. Screenshots are definitely showing some Java.
Use the visual designer and Java code will be generated for you. Oh, no. So generates Java code. You can easily add controls and drag and drop event handlers. Huh. Use Google at your own risk. But yeah, I mean, it's another one. It's kind of like Yahoo, right? I mean, you've got a big name behind it, so you know that it's, you know, up to snuff if you want to move that direction. Can't beat it.
All right, so this next one, why don't you pronounce this one?
Mocha. Mocha UI. It's Mocha. Mocha UI.
Okay, I was looking at the URL. I didn't look at that logo there for a second. That makes more sense. So this one, at first, you know, I researching these show notes, I came across some really beautiful looking websites, mm-hmm. and I came to this one, and I was kind of disappointed. I was just like, this is clean and nice, but like, I don't know, it didn't catch my eye until I clicked the demo button on the side.
Yeah.
And they have a really nice, clean, just general UI. Mm-hmm. I would really consider this if I was going to make like an admin panel or something for someone. You know, it's something familiar. You know, you got the top nav, you got a directory tree, you got a nice pop-up with minimized close.
Yeah.
Feels very... kind of like you're in Eclipse or something, I guess. Multi-tiled windows.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, my understanding, like with this, what we were talking about, is that you don't build HTML and then apply this to it. You build your user interface in Mocha UI.
Right.
But yeah, it's very cool.
Start from scratch. But yeah, I liked it. It was nice and clean.
This one's kind of cool because I think this is more just UI. You can have like an underlying application with it. Without having to do sort of all the entire application. You do your whole UI in this. You don't build like HTML and apply it to it. You build your whole UI in this, but looks like it's a little bit more of like an abstract, like this is, you know, just a UI framework.
Yeah, I mean, I could picture this, you know, as an email client. You know, on the left, you got your inboxes and things, and then your main window, or maybe a, you know, I'm gonna, it's nice and clean.
Totally. Totally. Pretty nice.
The next one we'll talk about is Sprout Core, which this one's been getting a lot of talk on the internet.
Yeah, it is. We're using it where I work right now. My buddy Ryan Heimbuck is writing an application in it. And it's pretty cool. Also, I know that Yehuda Katz, who was one of the he was like one of the lead developers at MERB, and then was one of the big guys for like the MERB Rails 3 merge. Right after Rails 3 was released, he actually left 30, or I think it was EngineYard. He left EngineYard and went to work full time for the Sprout Core team. So and he's a cool cat. He knows his stuff. So I think this is going to be getting a lot more traction in the future.
If I remember right, they're trying to basically make this so it's kind of cross-compatible too for mobile.
Right. They focus a lot on mobile development too, so that you can so one thing you know, that you have to really think about when, so a lot of these UI frameworks and JavaScript stuff, they do a lot of hardcore JavaScript lifting, that's, you know, that's okay, especially on the desktop, that's okay. But if you want your app to be used in the mobile environment, you can't, you know, even though we have like mobile Safari and mobile, you know, Chrome, which are really good, have really good JavaScript engines, they still don't have a lot of muscle behind them. So one thing Sprout Core really works to be is as fast as possible so that, you know, you can use it on a mobile device without it, you know, chunking up and dying constantly.
Good. It looks like you can... clone the Git. This must be open source, and so that's
most of these are open source, I believe. Is as it is right now. But Sprout Core is, you know, supposed to be you know, it's like again, you know, your full UI framework doing all your UI in Sprout Core, and it just does, you know, like JavaScript AJAX calls to interact with the application on the back end.
Looks like it's full stack. You can git clone, and it comes with a web server, so you can start it up, and I'm sure it gives you some instructions when you get it running.
Yep. Very cool.
So kind of like Rails. Cool. Is that written in Ruby? Like, do you write it mainly in Ruby, or does it just generate JavaScript?
No, it's JavaScript. You write JavaScript. That's one cool thing about Sprout Core, if I remember correctly, from what Ryan was telling me, is that any Sprout Core you write is actually valid JavaScript.
Nice.
Which is, I believe, not the case with the next one we're going to talk about, which is Cappuccino. Ryan also played with Cappuccino. I was talking to him earlier about what do you like about Sprout Core versus Cappuccino? And there's a couple caveats with Cappuccino. The first, and it could be, this could be sort of, you either really like it or you don't, is that you use Xcode to write, to design the user interface. So it's pretty nice in that you use, you can use Xcode to like put your buttons and use it. And then what it does is it takes that, I can't remember what it's called, and converts it to, you know, Objective-J, which is sort of this, they kind of made a JavaScript language that feels like Objective-C, which a lot of people really like Objective-C. So you go in the user interface thing in Xcode, I believe it is. You know, you make the user interface. You know, it looks very sort of Apple, very Macintosh. And then you know, it'll convert it, and then you write Objective-J to sort of interact with that user interface on top. But this is one of the things I was talking with Ryan about, where because Cappuccino uses Objective-J, it has to do a lot of really sort of heavy JavaScript stuff in the background to sort of, you know, turn that Objective-J into real JavaScript. So like Objective-J, you're not writing valid JavaScript. You're writing this sort of language that they then take JavaScript and sort of like, you know, what do you call it? You know, they sort of look through it and parse it and then do what they need to it. And it's doing so much sort of heavy JavaScript lifting that it doesn't work. It's kind of chunky on mobile devices.
And I assume you have to develop it on a Mac.
So one of the I thought they're working on an online editor to build the UI, so you don't have to use Xcode on the Mac if you don't want to. But I'm not sure if that's been released. But yeah, that is sort of one of the caveats, is you right now need to have a Mac. I mean, I think if I recall, you can like go into the, you can maybe edit the source code yourself, but it's kind of like if you ever look at like Visual Basic, if you ever look at the source code for the UI for that, you're kind of like, whoa, you know, I don't want to write that by hand. I'm glad I have a GUI to throw that stuff in there.
Yeah, very true. All right, the next one, we're going to kind of get into commercial. So up until now, in fact, yeah, except I don't know, I'm not sure about Google Web Toolkit, but the rest of these are open source.
Right.
ZK is also open source, I guess, but they do have a more of a commercial support
mm-hmm.
for this. And I mean, it's kind of, this is very much like jQuery and Dojo Toolkit or even YUI. But I did see that if you check out their spreadsheet, you could even embed, it's almost like Google Docs type spreadsheet in your app if you're creating something.
Oh, crazy.
It seems like it's kind of like the Dojo jQuery UI, but it looks like it's got a little bit more power behind it too.
Yeah. Interesting.
So if you're looking for maybe the next step, if you wanted to start with open source, but maybe have that commercial backing.
Right. Like a lot of people want enterprise support, and so this offers that for you. You could pay for super fast support if you don't want to wait for the community to help you out.
Yep. eBay's and Toyota are using it, Oracle. Big names in here.
Cool.
The next one that is, it's not open source. Well, it's open source for non-commercial applications.
Right.
Is the Sentia suite, which is ext.js, or I don't know if they is if that's short for extension JavaScript.
Or whatever. I don't know.
But it's that's their product for kind of the Dojo, you know, lighter weight stuff. They also have a designer, so they've got the kind of the Google Web Toolkit designer program where you can kind of drag and drop and create your own. If you look at their demos and their widgets, they're very, very polished. You can definitely tell that there's a commercial presence in this.
Yeah, totally.
So, I mean, depending on, you know, maybe if you're, you know, you're a freelancer and you're making a product for a pretty big business, you might want to consider going for something like this. It might make, you know, in the long run, things like this can sometimes make development easier. You know, I'm sure they have extremely well-written docs, support to call them up and ask them questions and things. And
totally.
Also some big names here, Adobe, Best Buy, Cisco are using this.
Yeah.
Another one, which is, I just kind of wanted to mention it just because I saw it was kind of big in the banking industry, was Backbase.com. Hmm. And their whole thing is, you know, keep whatever software you're using. And I'm assuming that a lot of these banks use the same kind of portal type software.
I think
they just brand it. Their whole thing was making banking software, which usually sucks, as you probably know, or, you know, it's getting better.
Yeah.
But they kind of make it more interactive and faster, you know, more like kind of like Sprockcore, where it's a lot of the client side development. Things, you know, are faster. It's loaded one time, like, and you know, you use Ajax and
just prettier, more dynamic, that sort of stuff.
Right. So I just wanted to mention these guys. They're basically saying, you know, keep your same, probably very expensive banking software and add our like layer on it.
Totally.
Give it a, you know, a social feel to it.
Things, yeah. So there's like, you know, there's you know, we kind of hit all the different levels of UI frameworks that you can have out there right now. There's sort of the add-on ones with sort of widgets like jQuery, YUI, and Dojo, you know, like widgets for particular little things that you're doing. You know, you can hit sort of just the plain UI frameworks and then plus or the whole application UI frameworks like Mocha UI, Sprockcore, Cappuccino. So actually I'm curious to hear if any of our listeners out there are using any of these, why you're using them, or if you aren't using some of them, tell us what your concerns are, because there's definitely a concern with, you know, with me, I remember when we first were talking about Cappuccino and Sprockcore at work, like for me, I just don't, you know, like if I go with jQuery UI and all of a sudden they stop developing jQuery UI, that's okay. I still have most of my UI. You know, I have to remake some widgets. But like if I went Cappuccino Sprockcore, they don't make it, the companies, you know, go belly up, then all of a sudden it's like my whole UI is in this framework and I can't like dig into the framework and figure out what it is. And that, you know, kind of makes me nervous.
Yeah. I just want to say one thing I forgot to say is that Mocha One is built on the MooTools JavaScript library. Kind of left tools out of the loop there, but that one is based on that.
Oh, hey, there you go. So check it out. Let us know what your guys' thoughts on UI frameworks are, what we got wrong, what we got right. We'd love to hear from you guys. So that wraps it up for this episode. If you want to remind you, if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, you can go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe and do that there. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. Let us know if we got anything wrong, because I have a feeling we may have in this episode, because we're pretty green in this area. I haven't had a lot of experience with it. So let us know your thoughts, concerns, whatever. We'd love to hear from you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you guys next week.